Sakurki. Prem Shiko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Dasari Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Sharana Kunda Radha Kundi Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannathpuri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrindaki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Mujabai Srimati Bhakti Kanta Swami Chami. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Vayu Charney Nirvishesha Sanyarani Paskati Padma Satarney. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Tapatamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavascha. Shri Rupam Sambhujatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Samsativam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lamita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Panchakalpa Chugascha Kripasam Vyavita Patitanam Pavanegra Vaishna Devam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, February 16, 2018, Bahrain, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, Understanding Material Nature, Text 18. Yata gandasya bhumesha abhavo vyatirekata apamrasaya chayata tatabhure prasyacha. Yata, as gandasya, of aroma, bhumehe, of earth, cha, and na, no, bhavaha, existence, vatire kata, separate, apam, of water, rahasya, of taste, cha, and yata, as tata, so, buddhe, of intelligence, prasya, of consciousness, spirit, cha, and translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So who's speaking here? Not yet. No. Devahuti. Chukri. Translation, as there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. Purport. The example is given here that anything material has an aroma. The flower, the earth, everything has an aroma. If the aroma is separated from the matter cannot be identified. If there is no taste to water, the water has no meaning. If there is no heat in the fire has no meaning. Similarly, when there is want of intelligence, spirit has no meaning. As there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. So this verse is Devahuti expressing a doubt. Her doubt is, can we ever be liberated? Do you ever wonder that?
Yes.
How many of you ever think, is Krishna consciousness really possible? How many of you think like that? Or maybe, is it really possible for me? So she's asking the same question. She's saying, I don't think it's possible. She's not saying, I don't think it's possible because it's difficult. She's saying, I don't think it's even possible. That there seems to be a link between, here she's giving the subtle body, buddhi, intelligence, and parastya, the soul. She's saying, if you have no intelligence, how are you existing? If liberation is defined, which it is, as being free from the subtle body, well, we have the gross body, right? Buddha-apa-lo-lo body, kama-mano-buddha-eva-cha. So we have the gross body, and we also have the subtle body. So liberation from the gross body is very easy. Take some poison, jump off a building, and you will be liberated from the gross body. But you will not be liberated from the subtle body. That's why we do not advise suicide, because then you are still in the subtle body. Being in the subtle body without a gross body is actually painful. So how to get liberated from the subtle body? That is a different thing. Or just like even little liberation from the gross body, if you do some tapasya, you know, if you do a nirjal fasting, you don't take any food, you don't take any water, you don't sleep, that's a kind of mini liberation from the gross body, yes? But you still have your mind. If any of you have ever done that, if you said, okay, this ekadasi I'm going to do, no food, no water, no sleep, and I'm going to chant 64 rounds. And you find, so you may conquer the body, I will not eat, I will not drink, I will not sleep. But the mind is a different creature. So she's saying, you know, how is this possible? Now she's also asking an existential question. Because if we want to talk about, well, who am I? What is my sense of existence? If we want to talk about what is my identity, how do we separate our identity from our intelligence? It's just like our identity in this life is based primarily on our memories. If you take that away, how do we exist? How am I a person? This is her question. What do I become? So to her, she's saying life must be with the body. And we have many religions in the world who really see that the body, mind, and soul are one unit. They don't understand that there could be a separation. So there are, I know, at least in America, we have some Christian groups, and they say that when you die, the body will get resurrected. You know, you'll just stay in the ground for some time, and then later on, all the bodies will come out of the ground. That's why they don't want to burn the bodies. Of course, then I ask them, suppose you didn't like your body, and you're kind of stuck with that body for eternity. How does it come out from when you were 2 years old, when you were 20, or when you were 98 when you died? But they cannot imagine, you know, and if they think there's a spirit, they think you like have a spirit. It's your possession, you know, like you have clothes, so you have a spirit. But many religious groups, they really don't grasp this concept that there can be an identity that is not the same as the body and the mind. So Devamati is having difficulty with this concept. Who will I be? If I'm not in the body, and I'm not even in the mind, who will I be? How will I be? What will I be? What is the meaning to this? And she's giving a material analogy. She's saying, just like there's a flavor to things. There's a smell. Things have their quality. And if you take away the quality, the thing is not the thing. If you take away the taste of water, it's not water. If water is not liquid or has no, it's not water anymore. Prabhupada's giving this. If there's no taste to water, water has no meaning. There's no heat in fire, fire has no meaning. here's fire, but it's no heat. How is it fire? So if you say, here's you, but there's no intelligence, there's no memory, there's no mind. So how is this me? Well, sometimes there's a debate about people who become very physically damaged. So the brain is damaged, yes? They'd say they're like a vegetable. We say they're in a vegetative state. And people will say, how are they even there? So there's this debate, should they still give people life support in a vegetative state? Because someone will say, well, the person's not there. Body's there. But they say, if the mind is not there. And I think all of us are more afraid of losing our mind than of losing our body, isn't it? I mean, if you had to choose between becoming physically disabled, you're quadriplegic, and getting Alzheimer's, if that was the choice, I think we would all choose being quadriplegic and keep our mind. Yes, isn't it? If I can walk, but I have no mind. So this is really distressing her. Now, Prabhupada points out some difficulties which are the source of this question. So he pointed out in the previous purports that this question is based on voidism. It's based on a lack of understanding, which is surprising actually in chapter 27, after so many instructions from Kapila. But she still doesn't really understand that there's a spiritual mind. She's thinking, without the material mind, what will we be? And the answer is, we have a spiritual mind. We have a spiritual form. So she's making some basic philosophical mistake. And the other mistake she's making is she's giving material analogies to try to understand the spiritual. So, of course, all of our acharyas give material analogies to understand the spiritual. There's whole sections of the Bhagavatam, especially from which preacher in the Bhagavatam. Which preacher in the Bhagavatam uses a lot of analogies?
Avadutta Brahman.
Avadutta Brahman, yes. What other preacher in the Bhagavatam? So many. Narayana Muni. That's one of his favorite teaching methods, is using metaphors and analogies. So we just finished a book which we hope will be printed very soon, which is telling the story of how to come to Krishna consciousness through analogies. And with one verse in the beginning of the book from Mahaprabhu, he says, without using metaphor, you cannot have rasa. So metaphor, analogies, is very useful to understand the spirit, but it is not complete. Because analogy means there's some points of similarity, but not all. Like you have a Venn diagram, you all know what that is? You have like two circles intersect, middle point is similar, but other points are different. So you cannot really say, okay, earth has a smell, water has a taste, so the soul must have material intelligence. It's not really analogous. So this is her other mistake. She's thinking the allegory is absolute. The good things about her question is she's actually using her intelligence. She's thinking very deeply. And this, using our intelligence to ask questions, is essential in spiritual life. So this is a very good, she's thinking very deeply about this instruction from her son, who's also her guru. So you've given me this instruction, but it doesn't make sense to me. So that's very good that she's really trying to understand it. The other thing is very good that she's not afraid to appear foolish. No, just like you were not afraid to appear foolish with saying the verse. I wanted to say, even sitting up here, that happens sometimes. You say the verse wrong, and then you're on video. If one is afraid to appear foolish, one cannot advance at all. What is the first item of knowledge the process of knowledge given in Bhagavad Gita 13:8-12. The first item, humility. Without humility, if we are so afraid that I will be humiliated, we cannot learn anything. If we always want to appear very intelligent and very learned and very respectable, then I guarantee you that Krishna consciousness will remain far away forever. So of course we don't usually tell new people this. If some of you are new to Krishna consciousness, please just cover your ears. I mean, if anyone told me when I first came that I would have to learn humility, I don't know if I would have come. It's not very attractive. You know, we think of humility as like, you know, you're kind of like, and everybody's like beating you or something. Humility is actually very sweet because it is real. Of course, we appreciate humility in other people. Huh? Nobody likes an arrogant person, but we don't want to be humble. Huh? So, she's not afraid to appear foolish. Now, you may say, well, you know, okay, I might be willing to appear foolish with someone I trust privately. My dear friends, we are still reading her foolishness now. Just imagine this. Imagine if your foolishness is put in the Bhagavatam. Just imagine that. And Prabhupada is criticizing your questions. Oh, this is voidism. And this is in the Bhagavatam. And millions of years later, people are still reading how you were foolish. Just imagine that. So this is the... Really, I mean, seriously. This is the depth of humility. And without this humility, one cannot progress. Also, her question is very relevant. She's not asking an irrelevant question. She's asking a question that's based on the instruction she's given. And it's a beneficial question. We're not supposed to ask foolish questions. Prabhupada says absurd inquiries are condemned. One time Prabhupada, I think he was in Japan, and one of the people said, Prabhupada, have you ever seen the demigods? Prabhupada said, why are you asking this question? He said, suppose I have seen Indra, Chandra, what benefit will you get? And if I have not seen, what harm will you get? So why are you asking? He said, better ask if I've seen Krishna. That. So, to ask absurd questions. No, this is a relevant question, and it's helpful for us, because we may also have this doubt. How can I be a person? What kind of a person will I be without my intelligence, without my subtle body? So what we can learn from Devahuti, and we're not really going to answer this question in class today because this verse is just the question. So if you want to know the answer, you'll have to come to other classes. But we're going to look at, I mean, we've already answered a little, that the soul has its own intelligence, but we're going to just look at this nature of asking and answering. So how should we ask and how should we answer? Because all of us are also answering questions about Krishna, correct? Even the children, I'm sure, they go to school and somebody asks them some question about Krishna. So what kind of questions do we ask? Well, first of all, asking questions is essential when dealing with Guru. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadakshanti tevyena jnanas tatvidarshinaha. Prashna. One should ask questions. So there's a very famous story of someone who didn't ask questions. Who was the person who didn't ask questions?
Mahaprabhu.
So I'm sure you know this story. So Mahaprabhu came to Jagannath Puri and he went ahead of the other devotees. Why did he go ahead of the other devotees? Because, yes, Goswami Nityananda broke his danda. Hare Krishna. What is this relationship between Gauri and Nitya? Very mysterious. So Gauri Nityananda broke his danda and Mahaprabhu said, I'm not going to stay with you people anymore. I can't trust you. You're breaking my things. He says, my danda was my only possession. You're broken it. So he went alone. And as soon as he saw Jagannath, immediately he was in ecstasy. So one devotee was saying, oh, you cannot see Krishna with the eyes, only with the heart. I said, no, you can see Krishna with the eyes. He says, well, that's only when Krishna incarnates. I said, but Krishna is incarnated as the deity. And you can see the deity not as some carving of wood or stone or metal. You see, there's Krishna. So Mahaprabhu, he saw, there's Krishna. And he was so happy. There's Krishna. And so he started having these sattvic bhavs. He started having ecstatic symptoms. Because that's why Mahaprabhu incarnated. He incarnated to taste the ecstasy of being his own devotee. In the material world, everybody wants to be God, but God wants to be a devotee. So he wanted to taste this ecstasy. What is it like to be a devotee? Because as Krishna, he cannot taste. He has to come as Mahaprabhu. So he's going this ecstasy and he faints. And he's fainting, he's barely breathing. It's almost, people think, oh, someone has died here. And the guards start beating him. Get out, what are you doing? And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he's there. And he was a very respectable citizen in Jagannath Puri, advisor to the king. So he recognized, well, this is actual ecstasy. And he tests, right? He put a little cotton and he tested. And then he told the people there, please bring this sannyasi to my home. I'll take care of him. Then later when the devotees came, they had to find, where's Mahaprabhu? So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya immediately, from the time Mahaprabhu came, he had a parental mood towards Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Mahaprabhu came, he was in this ecstasy, he was in difficulty, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he rescued him, took him to his house. So his mood was, I'm caring for him, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was elderly. Mahaprabhu was only 24 years old. So by age also, he's thinking, I need to take care of this sannyasi. And he said to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm very concerned. You are a young man. Generally, sannyas is taken in old age, after you've finished grahastha ashram. Now, after you've finished grahastha ashram, and then you've gone through the vanaprastha ashram, sannyas is pretty safe. Because if the mind says, I want this, I want this, I already had this. You understand? I already had. Okay, I want house, I want money, I want this. Oh, I already had. Finished. I tasted already. It's okay, sometimes. Very expensive. But to take sannyas when you're young, we found this. Prabhupada gave so many disciples sannyas when they were in their 20s, and only 20% of them were able to maintain. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very concerned. You're young, not only young, but so beautiful. How will you maintain your sannyas? How will it be possible? So he thought, I have to protect him, just like he wanted to protect him in the temple. Same. He said, I have to protect you. So your protection will be to know philosophy. That will be your protection. If you understand Vedanta Sutra, then you will see the world as Maya, and you will not be attracted. This was his thinking. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of etiquette, he said, and also he had another plan, of course. So he said, okay. So for 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is preaching this just philosophy. Some of the devotees were asking me with the children, how can we get the children to like Krishna consciousness? You know, we're just telling them all this philosophy, all these rules, but that is not actually bhakti, that is jnana yoga or jnana yoga. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was actually a jnani at the time. So he's teaching Vedanta Sutra according to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Mahaprabhu's polite, you know, he's just sitting politely. 7 days. You've seen the painting, yes? Mahaprabhu is sitting. Sometimes we give a class and people are like this. And if the audience is like this, then teaching is very tiring. One place, I'll not say which place, but one place, I was giving a Sunday feast class, and everyone in the audience was just like, whole time. And I would ask questions, nobody would answer. I'm thinking, why are they in the class? Maybe they're thinking it's some kind of magic, you know, if I just like sit in the class, somehow I take my body and put it in the class, so some magic will happen. I don't know. But and then it's exhausting for the speaker. And it's very discouraging also. Well, even if you're just talking to one person and they're just like... And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked him, I don't know if you're understanding or not understanding. Because you're not asking any questions. So it is essential to ask questions, even if you're God. Of course, it is also nice to ask questions because machchitam bhagatapranam goriyantas prasram patiyantastimam nityam tushantichara mantichara. When there's this exchange between question and answers, everything becomes very sweet. It's not just one way. It's a loving exchange. So, you know, there are six loving exchanges, but actually there are only three back and forth. Right? So what are the three? You can give or receive what? Gifts. You can give or receive what? Confidential talks, and you can give and receive prasad. So to have love, there must be giving and there must be receiving. If you're only taking, that's not love. And if you're only giving, that's not love. So when someone is sharing knowledge, you also want to reciprocate with them with this discussion. It is actually a loving exchange. So to be a loving exchange, this is very important, to be a loving exchange, the questions we ask must be beneficial. They should enliven. It should be enlivening. The presentation should be enlivening and the question should be enlivening. And then one has to learn not to ask just in a challenging mood. Challenging mood means I am asking a question in order to humiliate you. And ask me a question to show how you are wrong. So we should be asking questions to learn. We should have the mood. I used to teach my Gurukul students that before you ask a question, in your mind you should say, the other person may be right, other person may be right, other person may be right, other person... This is useful with husband and wife too, by the way. And the other person may be right, other person... Because sometimes the other person is right. I was talking one time to my son Keshava, and I had a very strong opinion. I don't remember what was the topic. And he said, Mata, are you sure you are right? Yes, I'm sure. He said, 100% sure. And then I was a little hesitant. I thought, maybe he knows something. I said, well, 95. So of course I was wrong. So when we're asking a question, it should be with this mood that maybe I'm wrong. Devahuti is not saying, hey, you know, there cannot be earth without scent, and therefore there cannot be spirit without intelligence, so you are just wrong. That's not her mood. Her mood is, I'm confused. And many times we can say that. So I would tell my students, in your mind you should say, maybe the other person's right, 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 and out of your mouth should come, I'm confused. And if you start with that, then it's much easier to ask a question to bring out understanding instead of to ask a question to try to beat the other person over the head with your superior knowledge. So we want to get to truth. And if I can be honest, I see even between the devotees in our Hare Krishna movement, sometimes we are not aiming for truth, we are just aiming for ego. I'm sure nobody here is like this, but we see this in places. Yes, we're having a discussion and questions, but the purpose is not truth. The purpose is I am right and you are wrong, and I am going to prove to you that I am right and you are wrong. And the other person is trying to prove that, and it doesn't go anywhere. And also, the question should be based on the teachings of the guru and the teachings of the shastra. So she's basing her questions like that. It's not just coming from something else. So this is how to ask questions, so how to answer questions. So our answer should be on the basis of sadhu, shastra, guru. I don't know how much I can emphasize that this is very important. So I was speaking in, we were in Mayapur at the ILS, the International Leadership Sangha, and I was speaking to some of the devotees there about how I'm seeing many times in our society we are replacing Shastra with some kind of modern, you know, cliche or modern truism. And that becomes our truth. You understand? We take some modern cliche from psychology or business or... That's all right if you can back it up with Shastra, but if you cannot back it up with Sadhu Shastra Guru, then it is a relative truth. You're just something that's come from modern psychology, chemistry, whatever. That's relative truth. It's not absolute truth. It's useful. We're not saying it's not useful. But if we really want to give definitive answers, it has to come from Sadhu Shastra Guru. Now, I'm not talking about like how do you get someplace in Bahrain. That, there's nothing in the Shastra like that. How do you spell this word in English? That's not in the Bhagavatam. But if we're talking about ultimate answers to life's questions, this means, of course, that we have to know the Shastra. We cannot give answers based on Sadhu Shastra Guru if we don't know the Shastra. I was speaking to one devotee in Mayapur. His 9-year-old daughter has her Bhakti Shastri degree. So one should know the Shastra. That means one has to study the Shastra. Oh, I have no time. I'm so busy. So, I think, do all of you have a mobile phone? Everybody has? Everybody has a mobile phone? Who here has a smartphone? Who has a smartphone? How many people here have a smartphone? Okay, so you can get on your smartphone all of Srila Prabhupada's books for free. Did you know that? Yes. You just get some book reading app, like a Kindle app, and you get all the books there. Or you can get often Vedabase on your phone. And you can get, all of you, I hope you're understanding my English. Everybody understanding my English? So we have Prabhupada's books spoken as audiobooks also. All of Srila Prabhupada's books as audiobooks. So when you were in your car, you can be hearing the books. When you are cooking in your kitchen, you can be hearing the books. When you are getting dressed in the morning, you can be hearing the books. So everybody has time. Everyone has time. Before you eat your lunch, you can read a little book on your phone. You can do that at work. Somebody will just think you're reading some important text message. Read one verse. I'm going to read one verse every day by the Bhagavad Gita before lunch. You read it on your phone. Nobody will think it is peculiar. So we have to know the Shastra. We have to know what Prabhupada says. We have to know what the Sadhu says. Now, this next point is also very important. Whenever we are answering questions, it has to be according to the adhikar of the person who's asking. Because if you preach too high, it is an offense. That is one of the offenses. To preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless, or to preach too high. But it is also not good to preach too low. So you have to know, what is this person's qualification? What can they hear? Because you cannot say everything to everybody. If you say everything to everybody, it will be a disturbance. Just exactly like if you're teaching 5-6-year-olds mathematics, you have to say to them, you cannot subtract a bigger number from a smaller number. If the child writes 3 minus 5, you have to say, no, no, that is wrong. So is that wrong? No. People do 3 minus 5 all the time. It's called credit cards. Well, but if the child is only 5-6 years old, you have to say, no, no, you can't do that. It's just wrong. So that is according to the adhikar. Otherwise, the child will become confused. And then one must also give answers according to the context. Why is the person asking this question? What's actually going on at the time? What is happening in this person's life? Even if someone has the ability to understand something, that something may not be proper in that particular time, place, and circumstances. Of the 14 items of knowledge, one of them is understanding time, place, and circumstance, and one is acting according to that understanding. If you look at the differentiation between Sattva-gun, Rajagun, and Tamagun, you'll see in the Bhagavad Gita, chapters 13, 14, 17, 18, you'll find that one of the main differentiations is the proper time and place. So like if you give charity to the right person for the right reason, but you give it at the wrong time and place, it makes it immediately in tamagun. So again, just in Mayapur, you know, trying to talk to the GBC, so they're having meetings at 6 in the morning and 8 in the morning, and at breakfast at lunchtime and till 8 o'clock at night. So I was saying to one devotee, well, at least they're not having meetings when they are in the shower. And one of them said, no, there was some story, Badri Narayan Swami, he's taking a shower, and some devotee goes in the bathroom, is talking over the shower. I want to need to talk to you about something. He's saying, I'm taking a shower. So one must know what is the context. One should answer questions also according to the context. And then answering should also be a loving exchange. We should be trying to benefit the person, not trying to show our superior knowledge and wisdom. But it should be an exchange of love. And when there's these good questions and good answers, it brings out our Krishna consciousness, and we all find great joy and satisfaction. I guess the final thing I should say is, although questions should not be arrogant, they can certainly be about controversial things. I was speaking to one devotee just recently. He's developed a whole program for teaching Bhagavatam. And in the rule book, it says no controversial discussion. I said, Prabhu, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj says that we should discuss controversies because they strengthen the mind. He said, no, we don't discuss controversies. I said, then you will destroy everything. Because if people have a difficult question and you tell them you're not allowed to ask, then they will think, oh, these people don't know. You understand? That incident in my life is why I decided to look outside the religion and tradition of my family and came to Krishna consciousness. Because I went to my religious teachers and I asked questions. And they said, you're not allowed to ask that question. I said, that means they don't know. So we should not be afraid of asking controversial questions. And when people ask difficult questions, as long as they are respectful, we should actually encourage them. So when I taught Bhakti Shastri for many, many years, and when I was teaching to the teenagers, I told them, every class you must come with 3 questions and try to get very difficult questions that I cannot answer. And the more controversial, difficult the question was, the more I encouraged them. So I remember one of my students, she was looking at some of Prabhupada's purports on the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. And she said, in this purport, it seems like Srila Prabhupada is being very critical of Arjuna. She said, but Arjuna is a pure devotee, and Prabhupada is criticizing him. How is this not Vaishnava Aparada? And I could have said, oh, you are criticizing Prabhupada of engaging in Vaishnava Aparada? You terrible person. I didn't say that. I said, this is a very good question. And now, I mean, she's second initiated and she's now, I guess, in her 30s, doing a lot of service for the movement. But imagine if I had said, don't you ask this question. Terrible question. Go away. I mean, even here, Prabhupada's doing that with Devamuti. He's saying this question is coming from a voidist perspective. So we want to encourage, and if we cannot answer a question, it's very simple. You say, I don't know. And that's okay. If you're not God, you're allowed not to know something. That is much better than pretending to know. So you can, my husband told me in the military, if they ask you a question and you didn't know, you said, I do not know, but I will endeavor to find out. You can say, I don't know, can ask somebody, or I can say, I don't know, but here's somebody you can ask. Like that. So thank you very much. And speaking of questions, we have some time for questions. Yes.
Only two questions.
Two? Okay.
One is, you mentioned about material mind and spiritual mind.
Yes.
That if you can a little more elaborate.
To explain a little bit more about material mind and spiritual mind. Material mind is a machine. The subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego is actually a subtle machine. And it is, mind and intelligence are programmed to protect the ego. Have you noticed that? That the mind comes up with so many ways to protect our ego. And intelligence planning how to protect our ego. Ego means I want to be the supreme. Intelligence makes a plan how I can try to be the supreme. And then the mind is supposed to accept and reject on the basis of the intelligence. Sometimes the mind accepts and rejects on the basis of the senses, which is how animals live. You know, the dog smells something, and the mind says, oh, this is food, accept. This is not food, reject. The way humans are supposed to be is the mind says, oh, I have this plan. I want to be a doctor. Should I study or should I go to a party? I should study. That's the way the mind is supposed to work. But it's simply a machine. That's all it is. It's a very subtle machine. Spiritual mind is a manifestation of the actual self, and it is a specific manifestation of the self as a specific desire to serve the Lord in a particular way. The spiritual mind is actually the personality of the soul. It is always there. You cannot, the spiritual mind, spiritual form of the soul, it is always there. It may be dormant and not so visible, but it is there. One has to awaken it. How does it get awakened? There's a very nice description. I think it's By following this course, the yogi gradually develops pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. In the course of his progress in devotional service, the hairs on his body stand erect through excessive joy. He is constantly bathed in a stream of tears occasioned by intense love. Gradually, even the mind, which he used as a means to attract the Lord, as one attracts a fish to a hook, withdraws from material activity. Purport. Here it is clearly mentioned that meditation, which is an action of the mind, is not the perfect stage of samadhi or absorption. In the beginning, the mind is employed in attracting the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in the higher stages, there is no question of using the mind. This is 3:28:34. Briefly, what we do is we take the mind, just like we're taking this body. We're speaking, we're sitting, we're serving with the body, yes? So we also serve with the mind. Man mana bhava man bhakta, maya shakta mana partha. We're serving with the mind. And we're using the mind to attract the Lord. 3:28:34. Like one attracts a fish with a hook. When the mind is perfectly absorbed in the thought of the Lord, That is called samadhi. But that is a state of the mind. There's two kinds of samadhi. There's mental samadhi and there's spiritual samadhi. Mental samadhi attracts the Lord. Jiva Goswami says that the Lord enters our consciousness on the path of our meditation. So we have to use the tools that we have. Right now we have a body and a mind. That's what we have. So we use those tools to serve the Lord with our body and to meditate on the Lord with our mind. When that meditation becomes perfect, it's called samadhi. This is detailed very nicely. When I was here last time, I was teaching Manashiksha, yes? That's detailed in the 11th verse in the commentary. And it's also in Nectar of Instruction, text 8, purport. It's in Harinam Chintamani, it's in Jiva Dharma. And those are being pulled from Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami is explaining with the mind, first, should I go through the stages of meditation? Would you like to hear? Okay. So first, it's hearing. So first, you hear, because you can't meditate on something you haven't heard about. So you're hearing about Krishna. But once you hear about Krishna in a meditative mood, then from hearing, one starts to accept that meditation starts to go internal, starts to become a part of you. Then you use the mind, interrupted meditation. You think about Krishna, you forget about it, you think about it, and forget. Then it becomes uninterrupted, so that one thinking of Krishna leads to another thinking of Krishna. Our mind is very good at this. We think about one thing and that thing, you know, I think, oh, I'm going to have some idlis. Oh, then I need to buy some, need to buy some ingredients. Oh, I have to go to the store at 10 o'clock. Oh, there's no petrol in the car. And one thinks when one thing leads to another, yes? So when that happens with Krishna, when you're thinking, oh, Krishna has such beautiful feet. Oh, but he's not wearing any shoes. And so there's marks of his footprint. And so the devotees are going. And when they followed him on Kaliya, they were crying so much the ground became muddy. And then they were slipping in the ground. And you go from one pastime to another to another. Then the next stage of meditation is uninterrupted and also focused. So like right now in the class, I see there are some people, they are in the class, but they are doing something else. They are coloring, or they are making garlands, or they're doing something else. So they're not focused. Right? So one may have uninterrupted meditation, but it may not be focused. Do you understand? And then it becomes fully focused. Then when it becomes focused, it becomes concentrated. When it becomes fully concentrated, it becomes samadhi. So I give the analogy in teaching Manashiksha, it's like making burfi. I don't know, does anybody make real burfi anymore? I don't know. But if you're going to make real burfi from milk, you start with milk. So first you just get the milk. Just get the milk. You put it in a pot. So that's like hearing. You turn the fire on the pot. That's like accepting. Then you start stirring the milk, but you know, you're not stirring all the time if you've ever made burfi. So you're stirring the milk, and then you're starting the dal, and you're stirring the milk, and you're starting the rice, and you're stirring the milk, and you're cutting the vegetables, yes? And then the milk starts to boil. So then you're stirring all the time, but it's thin. Then you're stirring all the time, and it gets thick. Then when it gets thick, it pulls away finally from the pot and becomes burfi. But this is all with the mind. And then Krishna becomes attracted. Just like we become attracted. If somebody is thinking about us, we become attracted. Will you visit someone who never thinks of you? Not usually. But if someone is thinking of you, you want to visit them. So Krishna becomes attracted and he enters the consciousness through the path that we have created through our meditation. He walks on that path. That's how Jiva Goswami explains. Then when Krishna enters, it is not the mind. Just like I am thinking of you, and then you actually come to my house, that is not the mind. You are there. So when Krishna appears in the consciousness, that is also samadhi, but it is a different samadhi. Krishna is actually there, and then mind is finished. So by focusing the mind, Krishna comes and mind is finished. Mind becomes spiritualized, basically. And the spiritual mind is developing. Now, it's not just like on or off. As one is using the material mind to focus, the spiritual mind starts to develop gradually and proportionately. One way I like to think of it, I don't know here how many of you grow anything here. But if you grow anything, I noticed you're growing some lettuce and some tomatoes, so maybe some of you are growing some things?
Yes.
Okay, so you buy a little package of seeds. Now usually you take the package, you tear it, and you plant the seeds. But suppose you took the package, and you took the whole package, and you put it in water. So what would the water do? It would dissolve the package, and it would sprout the seeds. So it's something like that. Or even when you just take a seed and put it in water, the water softens the outside of the seed. Right? If you've ever made sprouts or anything, the water softens the outside of the seed, and then the little root, it's delicate, yes? The little seed root, it's very, very delicate. And usually the outside of the seed is hard. So the water softens that outside, and then the little root comes out. So by focusing on Krishna, the material mind intelligence becomes softened, it becomes dissolved. And then the spiritual mind starts to grow. And it happens proportionally. As the material intelligence mind becomes softened, the spiritual mind starts to develop. And so we end up with kind of a mix, where we have some development of the spiritual mind and some existence of the material mind, because it's gradual and proportional. And gradually, the spiritual mind becomes dominant and the material mind is dissolved. And when the material, subtle body is dissolved, that is liberation. When one is liberated from the material mind. So it is already 9 o'clock. Should I take any more questions or should I stop? One more, okay. These, you two always ask all the questions. Is there anybody else who has a question? I mean, you have excellent questions, but does anyone else have a question? Okay, yes, sir.
I have 3 questions.
3? Okay.
I'm confused.
Good. Yeah, he listens.
Many devotees, they keep asking me why Srila Prabhupada's children didn't come into Krishna consciousness. Did they have taken birth?
Okay, so your first question is why did Prabhupada's children not come into... Of course, one of them did. One of his children did. And some of his grandchildren did also. When you are training another living entity, that living entity has something very interesting that is called free will. If you are taking a piece of wood, you can say, okay, I'm going to take this piece of wood and I want it to be like this and it will be like this. When you are taking another human being, you cannot say, I want them to be like this and they will be like this. Can anyone do that with you? No. So, it's a service we're doing for Krishna with raising our children. It's a service. Krishna says we do our service without consideration of happiness, distress, success or failure, victory or defeat. That doesn't just apply to building a temple or distributing books or raising funds. It especially applies to dealing with other living beings. And nothing is ever lost. When you give Krishna consciousness to someone, it's never lost. So they had association with Srila Prabhupada, that's not lost. But you cannot measure, if you try to measure success like that, it's not fair. Because you cannot control another living being. That's an unfair measurement. Otherwise, then what is wrong with God that we are all here? We are His children. I mean, Prabhupada does say if the material world is not running nicely, indirectly God can be blamed. But we are the rebels. There are a lot of us. Not only 1-2 rebellious souls, and many, many. So even we say three-fourths of the souls, they never rebelled. But one-fourth, that's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, the Amish, I don't know if you're familiar with a Christian group called the Amish.
Yes, yes.
So they're not preachers. They have a lot of children, but they don't preach. So they grow through their children. And they say about 75% of the Amish children take up the culture. So they lose 25%. But Krishna loses 25%. That's me. So is that, there's something wrong with Krishna that I am in this material world? We do our best with our children. I mean, all you can do is your best, that's all. And then how they turn out, I mean, there's so many factors. Also, the parents are not everything. And then there's two parents. Maybe the father is one way, mother is another way. And then there may be the grandparents and aunts and uncles, and then there's a school, and then today there's the media. There's so many factors influencing the children. Parents are not the only factor. And then they have their desires also. I mean, even in the Bhagavatam, there's King Vena. Anga was a great devotee, but his son was a monster. And then you have Hiranyakashipu, who's a demon, his son's a devotee. I mean, this happens. These things happen. They're not, or Karna. His mother is Kunti. His father is the sun god. What's wrong with this man? He's so full of envy and pride. Very mysterious person in the Mahabharata. So it's not guaranteed. It's not like that. Second question is what?
Second question is like, one devotee took a class over here and he said that many people come to the temple and only those who have sufficient Akyat Sukriti, it's like when you're going to an expensive shop, if you have enough cash, then you will go there and you'll buy something. But if you don't have enough cash, you will just go there for window shopping. So if our children, they don't have sufficient Akyat Sukriti, as you mentioned yesterday, we give them something daily, and so they won't be interested in it.
That's a statement, not a question. So you're saying the reason the children are not interested is they weren't qualified enough before they became my child. I think that's a poor excuse for our preaching in general, you know. If somebody comes and goes away, it's their fault. They weren't qualified enough. There's some truth to that. But that shouldn't be our mentality. One time Prabhupada said, I have created your good fortune. We should feel it is my responsibility. But what has Krishna said? Free from ego and free from lethargy. I think it's 333. Free from ego, free from lethargy. Ego means ahankara vimudha makarta hamiti manyate. I am the doer. I am the doer. Frankly, I am not the doer for myself. If I was a doer for myself, my hair would not be turning gray. Become brown again. You know, I'm not the doer. What to speak of for somebody else? I cannot make somebody else. I cannot make myself what I want to be. Can you make yourself what you want to be? I have been trying and failing my whole life. Am I the only one here? You can buy so many books, take so many courses, become what you want to be. Do they all work perfectly? No. So I cannot make myself what I want to be. And I have tried very hard. How am I going to make somebody else? So no ego that I am the doer, but no lethargy. Lethargy is, they don't have enough Agyata Sukriti. Hare Krishna, do whatever you want. So you're trying to win the battle. Arjuna's trying to win. He's not just like, Krishna's already won. He showed me the universal form. Hits you, doesn't hit you. You know, I'm detached. Success, failure, victory or defeat. You know, hey, is there an enemy over there? Hi. Yeah. I don't know if it hit him or not. You know, I don't really care. No, he was really focused to use that only seeing the eye of the bird. Arjuna was amazing. And he used that. No lethargy, but no ego. We should do our level best to actually help our children fall in love with Krishna. Not our level best just to get them to follow all the rules, but our level best to give them attraction to Krishna. Krishna is very attractive. That's not so hard. And do our best. Aim for the eye of the bird. And really, and then, you know, if they don't take, they don't take. That you cannot control. And do it, you do it for Krishna. Krishna, I'm doing this for you. I'm helping this jiva for you. But even what I've seen, usually, some exceptions, what I've seen usually, even if the children don't take to Krishna consciousness, at least they generally become moral, ethical, good people in the world. And at least they are grateful. They say, yes, I got some good education and training in Krishna consciousness. I have not seen too many children, very few, who become antagonistic. And that's usually something really terrible happened if they become antagonistic. They don't usually become antagonistic just without a cause. Third question, and then we will end.
Third question is, as you said yesterday, we have to do them some Krishna conscious interview.
Yes.
So if our kids, they don't like prasad, they don't like Krishna, they don't like philosophy.
They don't like prasad.
I mean, maybe an exception. They may prefer to go to some fast food outlet rather than having prasad.
But you can offer Krishna anything vegetarian. You can make veggie burgers also. Prasad, I mean, you can make some kind of prasad they will like. But anyway, okay.
So as a parent, how do you eat?
So if they don't like anything. They don't like philosophy. They don't like prasad. I don't see how anybody could not like any prasad. And they don't like kirtan. What kind of things do they like materially?
They like food.
Adventures. They like adventures. Do we have some lack of adventure opportunities in Krishna consciousness? Are we lacking opportunities for adventure? So some of you may remember, I came here with some grandchildren also. Do you remember?
Yes.
Last time I came with a granddaughter, and before that I came with a grandson. So I offered to my children, I said, when I go traveling, I will take a... And I don't have one now because I don't have any of the right age. A little gap, so... Another, like, 2 years, then I'll have another grandchild I can take if she wants to come. So why am I doing that? To give them some adventure. We have, you know, the youth bus tour. Indrajitna Swami has the Poland tour. Pandava Sena. We have actually a lot of opportunities in ISKCON for youth to have some adventure in Krishna consciousness. So right now, the whole world is in Mahaprabhu's movement, right? There's nothing to do. Am I correct? Is that right?
No.
No. The whole world's not in Krishna consciousness. There's so much to do. And a lot of what's to do is very adventurous. Give them some adventure in Krishna consciousness. One of my grandchildren who I took traveling said to me, Grandma, I don't like Charanamrita. Don't make me take it. Sometimes it was a little awkward, you know. I said, okay, that's fine. They don't have to like everything, you understand? We don't have to go, oh! You demoniac monster! How do you not like Charanamrita? You are going to hell! Say, what do you like? I have one grandchild who's very introverted. She doesn't like to go to festivals, but she loves doing my program at home. She's initiated, she's married, she She says, I like just having fun with my husband. And I don't say, you have to go to the temple for the program. How dare you have a program at home? You nonsense person. Do you understand? Oh, it was interesting when I was just in America. I was staying with my three older grandsons. Anyway, long story. They're going to university there. I was also there. So one of them said, Grandma, we should have a morning program. I said, okay, what would you like to do? And one of them said, well, you know, many times I go to the temple programs, I don't like it. I said, well, let's make the program how you want it. I said, what do you want to do? So he said, well, I'd like a kirtan, and then we can read. I said, what do you want to read? He said, I want to read philosophy, not stories. Okay. Somebody else will say, I want you to read stories, not philosophy. Does that make sense? So find something. And if you can't find anything, just be their friend. Just be their friend. Take some interest in what they're doing. Find some way you can connect with them with what they're doing. And then from there, you can gradually, when you establish a friendly relationship, you can gradually bring in something. Did you want to say something? But it's late, and I will get in trouble. Or you're telling me it's late. You're waving at me. Okay. Yes?
The last statement of the translation,
which translation? 34?
Intelligence, what are intelligence? Spirit has no meaning. It means what?
Of the purport. The last statement of the purport of today's verse, yes? If there's want of intelligence, spirit has no meaning.
What does it mean exactly?
That we are personless. Devahuti is mistaking material intelligence for being the only kind of intelligence. And she's saying that if you separate the soul from the subtle body, then it would cease to be a living being. But we can understand this statement of Srila Prabhupada from the previous purports, where he was saying that Devahuti's question is based on voyeurism. Actually, you could understand this at least two ways, probably at least 200 ways. But we'll look at two ways. One way you could understand this is Prabhupada's referring back to his other purport, where he says that Devahuti's question was based on voyeurism. And that in personalism, in order to be a spiritual being, you must also have intelligence. God is a person, he has intelligence. We are persons, we have intelligence. Another way you could understand this is simply that Srila Prabhupada is explaining Devahuti's question. And that second explanation would make sense with the rest of the purport. That Prabhupada was not making a statement of fact, but he was rather explaining her question. That she was saying, if you don't have material intelligence, but Prabhupada's not giving a qualifier. He just says, where there's want of intelligence, he's not indicating whether he means spiritual or material intelligence. So if Prabhupada means material intelligence, he's explaining Devahuti's question. If he means spiritual intelligence, he's referring back to the previous purport, that actually spirit must have personality and intelligence. And I'm sure there's another 198 explanations as well, but those are the two that seem quite obvious to me at the present time. So we should end now? Yes? Okay. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Devahuti and Kapila Dev ki jai. Raghavatam ki jai. Bhavani devotees ki jai. Thank you.